Hello and welcome back to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive minute by minute into Frank Herbert's world of Dune. I'm one of your hosts, Zach.
And I'm John.
How you doing today, John?
I'm good. We are back at
the
alternate recording location.
Our studio
also away known from as home. Also known as my living room.
Yep. And it's been a couple of weeks. We've been got some travel in, and the listeners won't even notice a difference, but we haven't recorded in 2 or so weeks, I guess.
Yeah. You were down in Miami last weekend for a bachelor party.
Oh man, tearing up Miami, which meant that I stood awkwardly in the corner at every club we went to. Surprisingly, knowing a lot about Dune does not translate to the Miami club scene.
Really?
You wouldn't have thought.
I would have thought just everyone there wanted to know all about Wood Deep.
Very few, actually. Oh, okay. Very few. But it's fine, though. We had a great time. It was my cousin's bachelor trip. We were in Sarasota, not Miami.
Okay. Well, you know, all of South Florida is just one chaotic hellhole. So
you can say this as a Florida native.
Yep.
All right, cool. Well, let's get into this, man, because we got some heck of a set of minutes to talk about this week.
This week is gonna be awesome.
Yeah.
First of all, we ended last week
On a cliffhanger.
Yeah, because you know, we didn't know what the Fremen were using. You know, what are they using to get across the desert? It's the Sandwalk. Who would have thought?
The Sandwalk. Yes. Yes. This minute, we start with the finishing of that sentence and we end with Paul looking at some kind of bug, it seems like. But the film tape finishes the sentence and says the Sandwalk, which I think is the first mention of Sandwalk in the movie.
Yes.
We see it briefly.
We see it in this scene. We don't see it beforehand.
I thought it was part of one of the visions. Mm-hmm. Okay. I don't know. That was months ago for us.
No. No. Before, you just see like Chani slow walking.
Gotcha.
Just like, because that was also the scene where, you know, she's like got that super thin dress, slow walking through the desert, and then hand and the Chris knife are just covered in blood.
Yeah.
That's that scene that we were talking about.
Okay. Gotcha.
The book also mentions that the Sandwalk is a dance-like motion with an irregular rhythm, which emulates the natural sounds of the desert. My question for you, because I haven't read Dune in way longer than I want to admit. If I had to guess, probably like 14 years.
Yeah, you signed on to do a minute by minute podcast about it.
Of the movie.
Of the movie. Okay. Fair enough.
Is the Sandwalk ever are the motions of the Sandwalk ever described in the book? Or is that simply just all really good choreography that was done by the production team?
So I looked through the encyclopedia did like a Command F find search on my PDF of the book. I couldn't find anywhere where it said anything other than like just irregular foot patterns.
Okay. So that's just entirely creatively done by production staff.
Yeah.
It's great. Good. It no, great, it's, yeah. It's really good. Love I just didn't know if there was any,
nothing that I could find. Please feel free to write in and tell us if there is anything that if I missed, but no, nothing that I could find. And this, the film tape, the description in the background gives pretty much everything you need to know about the Sandwalk, which is just, it's a way to not attract a worm as you're walking. Cause it's they're
ambulatory camouflage.
Right. The only other thing that I could find about the Sandwalk, that was really not explicitly told by, Paul's podcast that he's listening to. Is that it is an uncommon emote in Fortnite Battle Royale, and it cost about 200 V-Bucks, or you can get it with the Dune Gear Bundle for 1,500 V-Bucks, and it makes an appearance in Chapter 2, Season 8.
This is not sponsored, by the way.
No, nor do I know what any of that means.
microtransactions, that's all you need to know.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've never played a Fortnite before, so...
That's, yep.
Okay. Yeah, that's really the only other information that I could find about the Sandwalk that is not explicitly mentioned in the movie. That would have been weird, like a weird merch tie-in. If you just hear, like, in the background of this lesson that Paul's doing, and it's like, it was also mentioned in an ancient game, ancient human computer game called Fortnite. yeah, so that's the Sandwalk. That's what the cliffhanger was. But we don't really get to marinate too long in that.
No,
the scene changes from the Sandwalk to the film book talking about like the native plant life in Arrakis, which I thought was pretty cool. I mean, I was kind of under the assumption that, you know, there was this planet was kind of devoid.
Well, I mean, deserts just in general, like if you look at deserts here in the States, like obviously everyone associates cactuses with deserts, but yeah, then you also have like all this low, wide brush mm-hmm. kind of stuff going on. So like,
yeah,
that's not necessarily out of the question for it to sure. exist. That being said, Arrakis is significantly more hostile of a planet than any of Earth's deserts are.
Yeah. Yeah.
With it having, you know, several hundred mile an hour windstorms and sand that can cut through steel and shit like that. But they do mention a few different plants. And some of these bushes have incredibly deep root systems, which yeah. is not surprising because guess what? It's a desert and the plant's going to do everything it can to find those water sources that it possibly can. Yeah, but those root systems go like 450 foot.
Yeah, as the
feet ones or more
of the shepherd's tree is what it's called.
Yeah,
the shepherd's tree is a root system that can reach over 450 feet, which is crazy deep for a root system.
Yeah, that's, you don't really think about how long 450 feet is until you see it in perspective with something that is like in your daily life. Like if you see like your car next to 450 feet and it's like, oh shit.
That's like a little over 1 1/3 football fields, I guess.
100 yards is 300 feet. Yeah.
Yeah. So a little over 1 1/3. That's
1 1/2.
Yeah. About 1 1/2. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That is a crazy deep.
Yep.
That's a reference for our American listeners. Was it soccer pitch 90?
I don't know anything about
soccer. I'm sorry. My ignorance is showing here.
Sorry to the Europeans that listen.
A couple things before we move on to the next big important scene.
Yes.
One, Paul's headboard that we see. Got the koi fish yep. on it. Love it. Super intricate. Really cool. The other thing that I wanted to call out is I felt kind of a special connection with Paul on this one. He's a subtitles guy. Did you catch this?
No.
Oh yeah, man. So when he's listening, when he's watching his you know, holograms
yeah.
over there, over on the side, there's this red block.
And shit! Yeah,
you can see okay. it. You can see it scrolling. He's got subtitles on, man.
See, okay, so I didn't know if that was like subtitles or if that was just like extra information.
I don't know. I mean,
either way,
it was in
fuck
Gaelic.
It. Paul's a subtitles guy. I like to read my movies, and clearly, so does Paul.
Yeah, so we're kindred spirits here.
That is the only similarity that you have with Paul.
We also have great hair. I also share great hair with him.
No, you don't. You're bald.
For the listeners, I am a bald man.
Paul doesn't care about his subtitles, though, because something else has caught his eye here.
That's right.
For the first time, we see Muad'Dib. There is this little desert mouse in the projection of the plant. And Paul, like, I thought it was kind of funny, like going back and rewatching it, how like quickly he like sits up and he's enamored like, he's with guy. Looking at this little mouse, and he like crawls out of his bed and he's like standing over and looking at it and everything. He's completely enamored by Muad'Dib, which is effectively a little kangaroo mouse.
Yeah.
One of the very few native animal life that can survive on Arrakis.
Yep. That's right. And good thing he gets up too.
Yes.
Good thing he leaps out of bed to take a closer look at this mouse. because right after this, we hear a sizzling sound.
A little crackle, snap, crackle, pop.
Yep. And he turns around and he sees a small, like, fly-like object.
Well, first we see what looks like a cigarette burn in the wall.
That's true, yeah.
Like, it's got the little trail of smoke and everything coming off of it, too. And then, yes, we see what looks like the tip of a needle start to come out of the wall. And then it looks like a giant mosquito.
And what is this, John? It's a Hunter Seeker, one of the most iconic assassination tools in the Dune universe.
Yep.
And I was super excited with this kind of rendition of it. In the Lynch movie, it is not
just very a flying discreet. Syringe. Yeah.
It's not exactly discreet or anything like that, but I think they do a good job here. Just pause for 2 seconds. When I saw the Hunter Seeker come out of the wall, I instantly got a little bit angry because I am currently going through a every summer in Atlanta, it's very muggy.
Yep.
My home, they find a way to get in, but my house has a bunch of those little like fruit flies, that we see around the spring here.
Yep.
And this is exactly what they look like. The Hunter Seeker is like a big version of exactly what they look like. So as soon as I saw it, I was like, ah, these bitches,
these fuckers. You got to get one of those like little blue light.
I have two of them around the place. They don't stop, and I keep a clean place. You know this.
Yeah.
I don't know. Man. They're just around. They love Soul's litter box, I guess.
That would make sense.
Yeah. I don't know. But, yeah, so they look like a house fly or like a fruit fly. If you need a mental image, although you could just go watch the movie. It's a pretty good image there. Some information from the books and encyclopedia about the Hunter Seeker. They're roughly 5 centimeters long.
Yep.
It does have a needle protruding from the nose, but that is not exactly how the encyclopedia says that it kills you. Like, you know, we know poisons are very big in the Dune universe, but this is not something that would inject you with a poison. It gets into your body,
mm-hmm.
and it burrows into your body, and it finds its way in. Or this is at least according to the books and encyclopedia. It detects the electrical signals in your body via your nervous system and burrows its way to the nearest major organ in your body.
And then just wreaks havoc there.
Well, presumably by that time, it would have done enough damage to kill you.
You would hope.
Yeah. But once it has done enough damage and it detects no further electrical signals in your body, the Hunter Seeker just dissolves. It's made from a metal that will dissolve in the body and is considered untraceable in the future autopsies. So yeah, it is a really, you know, effective tool for assassination. It was once a very, very closely held secret of House Carina. They were the only house to use this and to employ this. And it was one of their most closely guarded secrets because they didn't want everyone else knowing how they managed to kill people.
Sure.
But after the current sitting emperor, when he was not emperor yet, so before he took the throne, after he survived an attempt on his life by a Hunter Seeker in the, you know, I guess, following proceedings, he let it slip exactly what it was. So all the major houses and minor houses, they know what it is. And in the books, it says, you know, Paul's very familiar with the Hunter Seeker because everyone knows, like they grow up hearing about this as a potential, you know, thing to look out for.
Sure. One thing that I saw when I was looking through and doing a little bit of research, they're operated floating thanks to a miniature Holtzman field generator. Shout out to our friend Holtzman.
That's right.
Just kind of passing along through space, doing his own thing.
He's everywhere, man.
The Hunter Seeker, but because of the Holtzman field, the camera feed that goes from the actual drone itself to the operator is like super distorted, which is why it's difficult sometimes to find your targets.
Yeah, it's like T-Rex from Jurassic Park vision. He relies on sight. If you stand still, It can't see you. It relies on motion for sight.
Right.
Yeah, so that's why Paul gets real still once he sees this thing. I think that's, as he gets real still, I think that's where our minute ends.
Yeah.
It's right there.
So, yeah, so about halfway through the minute, we just have what is the start of essentially the Hunter Seeker slowly making its way through the room, and Paul is very slowly, intelligently moving himself into the projection of the bush, which,
yeah,
you know, we'll talk about in tomorrow's episode a little more when we see Paul finish there, but like we can see him making his way. So yeah, this minute just kind of stops as they're doing their little dance around the room.
Yeah. I guess the only thing that I noted down here is, as Paul notices the Hunter Seeker, his film book just stops in the background. And I was listening for changes.
The audio for the film book stops.
Right.
Yeah.
But it didn't sound like it was at a pausing point in the narration.
No, I think that was just a creative, like it was a creative for us decision, but also like maybe from like a Paul's perspective, like all that noise is just drowned out. Like, you know, that's how fair. When you're like really either really focused or just like spacing out and like people's conversations in the background just seem to disappear or whatever.
Yeah.
I think that's just what this was.
Gotcha. So, okay. I noticed it. Had I been in charge of the audio design here, and no one should ever give me the keys to that kingdom, but you know, I would have expected it to like definitely fade to the background.
Or be like low in the background.
Just very low in the background. But no, it just completely cuts off. And
I mean, it wouldn't be surprised if they had multiple passes of that scene with
sure
different levels of audio, and they just kind of ended up deciding that that was the way that they wanted to go. So. Yeah.
I don't hate it. I just thought something I noticed.
Nope.
Cool. Anything else for this minute?
That's all that I have for this minute. It's pretty short in terms of substance, because like I said, about half of, or maybe not half, but a third of the minute is just watching the Hunter Seeker leave the wall and start to move about the room. So
that's right. All right, cool. Well, John, you want to tell them where folks can find us if they want to reach out?
Yeah. If you want to shoot us an email, you can email us at duneminute@gmail.com. On Twitter, we are at duneminute, and on Instagram, we are at the Dune Minute.
And I messaged you last week sometime, kind of in a panic, realizing that we had not checked the Gmail account.
Nope.
I don't think ever.
Nope.
And I checked it and nothing. So we're good. So we now have eyes on the email account. yeah, reach out if you'd like to say anything about the show or give us any kind of feedback. Hopefully it's good feedback. That's the preferred way. I'm going to do it, man. Like, subscribe, and give us a rating on Apple Podcasts. It definitely does help out getting us to a wider audience. If you feel like it, if not, it doesn't matter.
We're just doing this for fun.
We're doing this for fun. That's right. So, cool. Well, let's get back here tomorrow, and we will talk about the rest of this fantastic Hunter Seeker scene on the Dune Minute Podcast.
We'll see you later.
See ya.